Yakai. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, listeners. How are we?
Yeah, Jim and Nick here on Moonish Maggie on RTR-FM. Thank you for joining us on another week of fun.
Well, on fun, but just before radio. We go any further, Jim, pinch and a punch for the first day of the month. First day I got it.
I knew that had to happen. April Fool's Day, and we're hearing funny business about the Premier and all that sort of thing. We thought we might try something on our listeners today, but thought, no, that's very childish.
Well, true, yeah. We can't go misleading our listeners.
Yeah, so I was going to invite Ashley Barty onto the show, but all the way from Miami, that's probably not able to do that. I was going to invite the new Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, Stephen Dawson, along too, but I thought, no, that'll be another April Fool's Day. The new ministers, I would imagine, would be very busy, Nick.
They would be, I would imagine.
Mm. We know now Ben White, the Honourable Ben White, has stepped down to take care of personal business, but he's threatened to do that a while now. So Stephen Dawson, the Minister for Disability, has now stepped into that chair. Whoa, that'll be a steep learning curve for Stephen Dawson, I would have thought.
Well, one would think, eh? Mm. I mean, yeah, our portfolio is always very sharp learning curve for a lot of people, no matter how gifted they are.
Mm. And look, I've invited him on the show. That's not really an April Fool's joke. No. I did invite him on the show, but that was only today. So we always do things sort of, close to the edge.
Sometimes the best time is strike when the iron's hot.
Yeah, that's it.
And, you know, when we're walking up them steps there and our knees are crackling and the steps getting further.
Don't laugh about my knees.
Well, yeah. It is hateful.
Anyway, I'll text Stephen Dawson this morning, so probably his media hacks will now be listening in and saying, well, we've got to get Stephen Dawson onto that Moonish Mag show, the award-winning, media show that Steve and Nick are involved in. And you never know.
That was Jim and Nick.
Jim and Nick?
Yeah. You said Steve and Nick. But never mind. We know
Stephen.
What
that is. Oh, look, I'm getting Steve getting into that frame of mind that he's coming onto an award-winning show. Mm-hmm. And he should be honoured to do that. So you media hacks there up in Parliament House, encourage a man to come along and speak on a show that goes out to, I was going to say 100,000 listeners, but that's probably wrong, at also Noongar Radio. And I'm sure a lot of people would be keen to listen to the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, given they tune into Moonish Mag to hear what we've got to say.
Yes, that would be very interesting. And then going out to our local audience with Noongar Radio, would be very interesting to see firsthand what he's, as opposed to the mainstream medias and that.
Mm. If you tuned into Moonish Mag for the first time, normally we have some dynamic guests, and today is no exception. It's just just Nick and me.
Sorry.
So we'll just talk about ourselves. We do that quite easily, and as I say, Nick can talk underwater, and that's something we'll keep in mind for the rest of the show. But there's some interesting things happening in the last week that have sprung to mind. What do you say about your Telstra bill?
It keeps going up, Jim. I can't work out why it keeps going up. I'm still using the same data and that stuff there, but it just sort of goes up.
Only this week, eh?
Well, I've noticed that over a bit of a time, so I guess there has to be some hidden reasons around it. Perhaps we can talk about that later on.
We might, and in the meantime, look, we talked about some interesting music too, available on Aboriginal music, and we'll be talking to our programmers sometime in the near future to update some of our records, because you and I keep playing the same records, the same music.
Almost like a record,
So Telstra, Nick, what have they done?
I don't know what they've done, Jim, but Telstra have been stripped of their reconciliation status over unfair sales to Aboriginal people. Apparently the company exploited customers and their vulnerabilities in selling mobile phone contracts, according to the ACCC, which is the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission. And there's sort of on an average depth of about $7,400. So Reconciliation Australia said it was extremely concerned. It has extreme concerns about Telstra's action in the case of what the ACCC has said involved unconstitutable conduct in the sales to Aboriginal people of mobile contracts. Reconciliation Australia said that it was based on its own investigation. It has revoked Telstra's elevate status.
Wow. I think there's only about 20 elevate levels? Companies.
Is in.
There? Well, there's several layers of reconciliation as applies to reconciliation action plans. Elevate is the top status where companies are doing really well in in achieving, say, their targets around Aboriginal employment.
Okay, so it's just mainly around employment as opposed to customer service or across the board?
It's a number of factors that companies have to achieve if they want to reconcile with the First Nations people of Australia. And it's around interaction with Aboriginal people, say at a community level, collaboration at a community level, which could mean and pan out to be business for Aboriginal people. And business for Aboriginal people have increased amazingly since reconciliation was established some time back now. But so a number of very big organisations, including Telstra, Rio Tinto, Wesfarmers, BHP, the big miners, are all at Elevate level where they're performing really well in the reconciliation space. I mean, a lot of our people, Nick, aren't necessarily approve of reconciliation because they see mm-hmm. more of a that Australia needs to be more in a reconciliation conciliation role as opposed to reconciliation, and a lot of Aboriginal people seem to think, well, we've still got the work to do, that we're still reconciling, we're still doing all the work, and the 97%, which is non-Aboriginal people, still expect too much from Aboriginal people. So I think there's been some criticism around the reconciliation movement, and there are people that won't support what reconciliation means. I went to the Reconciliation West Australia AGM this week, which was the other night. There are 70 people there, probably 3 Aboriginal people. That probably indicates the support that Reconciliation Western Australia have. But your comments there related to Reconciliation Australia in Canberra and their attitude to what this company has done in, I guess, fraudulent behaviour mm-hmm. for the sale of mobile phones to Aboriginal people in remote areas, which probably don't quite understand the meaning of the business. And I think what's been said is there are Aboriginal people that have been sold phones and put on sort of really quite dramatic contracts when they don't speak English, for example, and English might be their fourth or fifth language.
Mm-hmm.
So it is looks to be a quite a serious offence. Who's the ACCC?
The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission.
So they've seen fit to say that these people have done the wrong thing.
Yes.
So obviously some national monitoring group that looks at fraudulent behaviour, I suppose. And they're probably not the only one that look to see what organisations are doing. So mm-hmm. I suppose it's the same as what happened with Rio Tinto, if you recall, when they damaged some sacred sites in the Pilbara. That would have put a dent on their sort of,
their rap plan.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but it would have put a dent on their reputation.
Back into the community in terms of, why would they want to get into a rap plan and promote benefits for Aboriginal people in the broader community? But and I could see where a lot of our people are coming from the negative point of view, because it just seems like a modern day continuance of exploitation.
Yeah, and phones are very much. Everywhere you go, our mob have got mobile phones. Well, I'm not on Facebook, but it's very popular in, mm-hmm. in our communities by way of communication. Let's face it, Telstra is probably the biggest communications organisation in the country.
Just think about this, Jim, for a moment. Just think about our old message sticks. Remember our old message sticks that our people used to have where they have symbols and that stuff on it? And it's a communication tool?
Yes.
When I look at that, I see that as probably in a very advanced engineering process, which is called subtractive engineering.
Mm.
And that engineering process, from my point of view, when I'm looking at the magic stick, is when you get an object and you take the excess off and you keep the final product, which is the magic stick. But that engineering process, for me, has been what's been driving the world economy since the Industrial Revolution, subtractive engineering. But also, it was a communications tool, an ancient communication tool for that particular time. Now we're talking about mobile phones in this modern day. So when I look at that message stick, I see that as a great-great-great-grandfather of a particular tool that our people use for communications. And around the world today, we're talking about mobile phones and that communications.
Look, Nick, when I started work, we didn't have computers on our desk.
Oh, no, true.
No, yeah. We didn't have computers. In fact, we had a big computer bank, and when we communicated with our colleagues within the department, I worked for a government department, it wasn't about emails. No such thing. What is emails?
Well, we had to learn them as we went along. That was new, innovative processes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you'd have to wonder about how communication in those days was probably so much better. I mean, it's more efficient now because you can connect up with so many people as we do with our telephone, mobile telephones and Facebook and Instagram and all those various things that are very popular these days.
But sometimes it has hidden process in terms of that communication. Sometimes the translation into communications can get lost and people can receive the message differently than the intent of what it was transmitted for.
Yeah, I know. We should go to a song, but I know original people that refer to Facebook as Facebook.
Well, it's a modern-day tool sometimes of keeping our mob divided.
And also very strong on lateral violence.
Yes.
And a lot of our mob are, that's part of the world today, and that's part of the world we've been taught by the dominant culture, the 97%.
You're listening to the Mortgage Mag podcast on RTRFM 92.1.
And I don't know how many, ministers always talk to media and they don't need approval, I don't think, but talking directly to a minister's office is something we learn that, there's sort of steps to go and there's minders to go through. And I tell you what, in previous ministers, there's so many minders to go through that you have to really wonder whether there's a minister there at all. They're just a fandom.
You think you lost your mind?
So good that Stephen Dawson, the new Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, has made contact to say he'd like to be on the show. So that's good. So that's he'll be talking to listeners of RTRFM and Noongar Radio. And Nick, we were away last week.
Yes, Jim, we were. Unfortunately, we had some business to deal with. Yes.
So sadly, we've had quite a number of losses of our elders, and surprisingly, I didn't realise that both Nick and myself were connected to this lady, and it sort of coincided with Mortgage Mag, and Nick, even worse on the Friday, two of our mission survivors, one here in Perth was we had to say goodbye to him, one down in Katanning from the Marybank mission.
On the same day.
Same day. Mm-hmm. So that's, and sadly one had passed some time ago, and there was sort of conflicting issues with family about burial, and which took some weeks, which was not usual in our communities. And although I should say there is conflicts around burial, around power of attorney, and the fact that our community don't necessarily have wills, Nick, and it always creates a bit of extra tension and trauma around the sadness of sorry time and grief and loss time. And And last week was very much part of that, and we probably should play a song for Emma Donovan, because she appeared at the funeral on Thursday of our loved one, our elder, and she in fact was the granddaughter.
She's the granddaughter,
the deceased.
Yes.
So we'll find an Emma Donovan song.
We'd have to, because the way she sung at that service.
The old rugged cross, which is a favourite at Aboriginal funerals, I've got to say. And there's so many professional artists that sing that as well, including Johnny Cash and Charlie Pride, and to name just two. And we wouldn't play their music on the show, because we always just show First Nation, play First Nation songs. We'll find something from Emma Donovan. I think the band is called The Putbacks.
The Putbacks.
And we do have something on RTR's massive song list. And we're always thinking of new songs to introduce it to our listeners here at RTRFM. And there's so much music around, Nick. You've got to really sit down and really appreciate it. Marinda's have a new one. Glenn Skilthorpe's got a new one. And there's so much music around. And I suppose that's been, I guess, a bit of the lay of the land in the last couple of years with COVID around. People are
spending time.
And lots of time at home on studios. And I've even seen some amazing projects where musicians are joining each other from all around the world, you know, and it's it is a good time for music. A sad time, as I say. Nick and I had a bit of sorry business last week, and it never ends. We're aware of people passing this week, Nick, and there's a never-ending grief and loss issues. Which, I mean, I talk to a lot of people, as we both do, and when you talk to non-Aboriginal people and say, "Hey, how many funerals have you been to?" and they might tell you, "Oh, one or two," or you know, put up their hand and say three or four, and what do we say?
Well, we've
two or three a month.
Well, we've got choices sometimes, and we've got to make that sacrifice of which one we do go to, or send family to different parts because it's so many of our mob. Even though we're only, as you mentioned earlier, Jim, we're only 3% of the population, but we spend a lot of our time in grieving.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, last week was no, you know,
no exception.
No exception, and that's our cultural responsibility.
You know, just to pursue it a bit more, and you know, I have a great deal of respect for Australian of the Year Fiona Stanley, and Nick, some years ago, she was very heavily involved in some child health research. You might remember 2003, in fact, when they had a national review of child health issues and what it means for Aboriginal communities. And one of the things that really was brought home to me was how she did within her research talked about if an Aboriginal child experiences trauma, and she described it as domestic violence, car accident, contact with police, contact with authority, chronic illness or death. If an Aboriginal child experiences, I've got this around the wrong way, if a non-Aboriginal child experiences that sort of trauma, say once a year, an Aboriginal child will experience that six times.
Multiple times, yes.
Multiple times. So you think about that and the trauma that's impacted on our peoples for many generations now, and now it's, I don't know, maybe it's because we're getting older, Nick, that we're experiencing more trauma because there are people with similar ages that are going through poor health and ultimately death. And maybe that's a sign of the times, and I have to be reminded, and I do that every time I walk up these stairs to come to the studio, that I'm not a young person anymore. So be reminded of the fact that there are sad realities to our world where people are, and you only have to walk around any of the public hospitals to see how many Aboriginal visitors there or how many Aboriginal patients are there, and sign of the times. So just, you know, suck it up, old man.
True.
You know, we have to, because it's, yeah, dry your eyes, princess, people would be saying. Yeah, but this is a real world. This is the trauma we go through. And we talk a great deal. And in the last little while, we've had Daryl Henry, a colleague on board, talking about trauma and the impacts. And it's about time we got him back. And I almost thought we should invite him back today. But we'll plan that because, Nick, we're going to do some filming of Daryl.
Yes.
And he probably doesn't know this yet. He's probably listening and thinking, filming?
Filming?
What, you're going to put me in front of a camera now? You put me through torture coming into the radio studio, he says. But I think he enjoyed it. So we've got to talk to him, I think, about what we've just talked about in the last 5 minutes, Nick. And I think how he's put it in such a really amazing way. You know, he's got a lovely style that talks about things. And for me, when each time I've had him in the studio now, and you've laughed at this because of sort of I'm talking about the light bulb moment, you know, the light goes
the light
on.
Bulb moment,
like I'm
yes.
sometimes sitting in the dark in a studio and the light goes on. It's really about what he's been saying, you know. And we, you and I have worked in this area around trauma and Aboriginal people for, well, all of our life, but he's coming in and showing us a whole new way of looking at things, which something I really quite look forward to. And and he says to us as non-academics, sorry, you're an academic, I'm not.
What's but an academic, Jim?
But, he, you know, I sort of look at academics that are social workers, and, you know, we've had Helen Milroy in, and one of the very few child psychiatrists in the country. And you have people like that, and you look at them and you think, wow. But then what did Daryl say? He said, okay, you may not have the academic background, but you've got the community. You've got the community knowledge, the community know-how, and you know how community works, which I thought was probably a bit of a compliment in a way. But
and
that's one way of looking at it. And sometimes academics, you know, they don't have the worldview. And, you know, I'm not sitting here running academics down, but a lot of academics go from high school to university and not really lived. So that's, I guess, my point.
And I guess that comes in the other side of that wisdom, practical wisdom that our people have learnt over the years with our elders and stuff coming through, that, you know, that practical wisdom and that knowledge around the practical side of life.
Yeah. I think the worldview has opposites when you think about Aboriginal people's worldview, non-Aboriginal people's worldview, because worldviews, you know, take into a lot of consideration for non-Aboriginal people. Worldviews for First Nations people is totally different. Just had a text from Stephen Dawson's office. They might be on air next week. Hey, we've got a text number too. 0405 921 921. If you want to have a yarn with us or text us and say hi, because we'd like to, you know, we get communication regular. We don't always acknowledge you, so forgive us for that.
You're listening to the Mortgage Mag podcast on RTRFM 92.1.
Oh, yes, it's an RTRFM Mortgage Mag. Nick and Jim here. If you just tuned in, we've been talking sad stuff today. Make no apologies for that, because that's what our community is, a sad state of affairs with endless grief and loss and dysfunction. And Nick, I've been invited to speak at a national homelessness conference later on this month, and my topic is how does trauma impact on homelessness, and how does trauma affect people in their homes? Because a lot of people that are suffering trauma, it sort of plays out in such a way that they get their three strikes and they're out, you know, from public housing and evictions. And we've seen so much of that. So to me, it's a difficult subject to approach, but it's a reality. And in talking to colleagues in the last week, since I've sort of sat down to think about my 20-minute production, it's sort of the conversation goes like this: well, we've been homeless since Captain Cook arrived. So it throws a different reality on what we're talking about, because the whole thing around Captain Cook and removal and taken from country and disbursement is being homeless.
That's right, Jim. And you know, we've had many, many, many generations and many, many years of experiencing that in a lot of our community today. That, as you mentioned, those three strikes. You know, sometimes those three strikes are not necessarily their fault. It's other people. But you know, when the department or the agency gets the reports and it comes out there and it goes on to the our poor community mob that are trying to do their best in this modern world, and unfortunately, a lot of things seem to come up against them all the time. But it would be interesting, and I guess you would have a lot of material for your talk.
Oh, look,
it's
I do.
A matter
I
of
do.
What are you going to leave in and out, so to speak.
Yeah, and part of that is a conversation that Pat Dudgeon recently had at a forum here in WA. Now, Pat Dudgeon is one of our very few psychologists, and in fact is chairperson of the Indigenous Psychologists Association nationally, has got a very high profile over at the University of Western Australia, and she talked in one of her papers about trauma and how it affects people every day, you know, every day, but and how it affects people in just, you know, everyday life, and we see that far too often. I want to change the subject and talk about Fist of Fury.
Fist of Fury. What's Fist of Fury, Jim? That sounds like a anger, well, or is that a movie, a well-known movie of? Go on. Keep going.
Well, Fist of Fury was one of Bruce Lee's first ever movies. Now, I've never seen a Bruce Lee movie.
You haven't?
I can't say I have, but
okay.
A lot of our younger folk have, and maybe some of your, maybe you can recall, but Fist of Fury was about the Karate Kid. It was about how you use your fists, and Bruce Lee was probably died too young, but The Fist of Fury was part of the International Perth International Festival.
Yes.
And how Fist of Fury is, they played the film, but every action, every verbal in the film was translated Noongar.
Well, not looking at it then, Jim, but looking at it now, when I look at the Fist of Fury and going to see it, you're so excited and seeing someone so talented and having to, I guess, beat up all the people that were oppressing him in his community. But when you look at it from a deeper end, it was his nation was sort of isolated or diminished in his own country, and every other foreigner and stuff were putting him down, and they were sort of deemed as the as a title on that page was the sick man of Asia, and they were looked down upon, and it was his way of fighting back. And I never took any notice of that until recently, when what you're talking about now with the Noongar Danju Fist of Fury and the language and that stuff, I could see the similarities are so poignant to me.
Yes, I'm trying to find out where it's playing, but evidently it's playing sometime soon. But it was a real fun thing. So Somerville Stadium, it's been told, 4th of if it's on this Saturday week at Somerville Auditorium at UWA. That's where I saw it. But you know, we've had Kylie Bracknell on the program, Nick, talking about it, the work that was involved in that. So Bruce Lee's Kung Fu classic from 1972 has been propelled from Hong Kong cinema to global stardom. But the Noongar mob in WA had brought it out in a different style. It was funny, and the auditorium at the Somerville Auditorium was a classic. To look at something like that in the open air. And they said deliberately they want to show these things in the open air so they can actually get our old people along to have a good laugh, because it was funny, and I must say, enjoyed it. Fist of Fury. You saw some other production too.
True, but just on that Fist of Fury, for me it was so... I pretty much laughed most of the way through that picture, even though I've seen it 100 times in the old original way. But listening to our Noongar language, for me it was so powerful. And when I heard some little words that I'm familiar with, it just sort of brought joy to my, you know, to me, and I was just giggling all the way through when I heard some of them things. But yeah, I went up on the weekend to the Kalamunda Arts Centre up there where they had the ice house, and that was a
musical
hip hop opera thing about ICE, the drug. and the impacts it had on our community, and it was written from a first hand experience from the director.
Wow. And it was that all would have put made in, an impact,
and the music and the actions and stuff there, you know, again sitting out front row and listening to a hip hop, which may not have been my scene, but I just sat there and I was just mesmerized with the only four cast. It's only four people on the stage, but they just how it was done and the stories behind it and the music and the actions and how talented they were. Just sort of really, really, I was really admired by it and impressed by that ice. But also the negative side of it is the you know, the drugs and that stuff and how it has negative impacts on our community.
Mm. And, you know, we've been talking about music today, and theatres has taken its place now. You know, Aboriginal theatre has taken its place. And we've got a listener who's just piped in to say, "Hey, I always enjoy your show. We saw the museum display of the songlines of the Seven Sisters on the weekend. It was brilliant. Remind people of it." Oh, he's telling us to remind our listeners. It is only in WA until Anzac Day, and that's from Rowena, I think. Good on you, Rena. Thanks for letting us know. So another opportunity for learnings, if you like, or getting some real understanding of the oldest living culture on the planet.
And one of our strengths, Jim, is that storytelling, you know, because our language and our stories and our creation stories are all passed down through the oral tradition of oral history, sitting around the campfires and telling that story on. So very good storytellers, and branching it out into the other arts of theatre and plays and that stuff. Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, Yuri Arkin, who's the Noongar Theatre Company here in in Perth. What does Euryarchan stand for? Stand tall, eh?
Standing tall, standing up, yep.
Yep, and the work they've done. Euryarchan Theatre, Noongar Theatre, which used to be in Murray Street, Perth there, have now moved back to the Subiaco Arts Centre. And they had their annual picnic last night. Oh, I just realised I should have been there. Their annual picnic was last night.
That's right, it was last night.
I wondered why I was meant to talk about it, because I should have been there and didn't go. So Euryarchan had their annual picnic last night in the grounds of the Subiaco Theatre Company, and they've been really busy. Euryarchan was described to me as one of the busiest amateur theatre companies in Australia.
And they do a great job, Jim.
They do.
They do a great job from what I've experienced and so on. And witnessed, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, before we've been chatting on here, we played Emma Donovan, and we've played that for a special reason. Her grandmother passed away recently, and both Nick and I had some sorry business last week. It was closely connected to both our families, and Emma sang that amazing song, Old Rugged Cross.
Old Rugged Cross.
And if you don't know it, you know, you might want to Google it, like you might want to Google and find out more about the Fist of Fury, because in one breath we're talking sad stuff, in another breath we're talking, very comical Fist of Fury.
But it's that consistency through it, Jim, and that's resilience.
Resilience, a good laugh and cry.
And the humour and stuff, no matter what's thrown at you, you're still up there having your go and having a laugh at it. And sometimes.
Yeah, so you go and see Fist of Fury and have a good laugh and a cry. And we sometimes just have a good cry.
Well, that's it.
You're listening to the Mordech Mag podcast on RTRFM 92.1.
So, nearly coming to the end of the show. We've had an interesting discussion today, Nick, even if it has been a bit of sad stuff. But life must go on in the world. We're coming up Easter.
True. Yeah. 1st of April today, and Easter weekend, Good Friday and that tomorrow, and the holidays,
I suppose people have holidays. It's Good Friday tomorrow. A lot of business will be closed down.
Yes.
But then Monday, it's Easter Monday.
The schools are going to be closing down for their school holidays, and all the mums and dads out there that's going to have children around their feet for the next 2 weeks. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. So Easter obviously has a lot of significance to a lot of people and different cultures, in fact, how it means different things to different people. And to a lot of our community, it's just a matter of eating a lot of chocolate. And I don't know what the significance of chocolate is at Easter, do you?
I'm stumped there, Jim. I'm stumped. I just know that there is a high demand for it, and I'm expected to buy quite a bit of it. But I can't understand, for me anyway. But, we're into that. Of course, it's the 1st of April. We're going into our next Noongar season of Durang, which starts to cool down. So hopefully after today, things will start to cool down and we'll start to head down into some more cooler weather.
I mean, we're going to have a whole new conversation of what is the significance of Easter, but it's sort of like just recently we had Valentine's Day. And, what did that mean for people? I mean, that's opening up a whole new conversation and we don't necessarily want to do that, but Easter is probably a time where we relax and what is the real significance of Easter? A lot of people don't necessarily realise that. I had a chap with a Christian fellow today. He said, well, don't forget to wish people a good Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, bro, that's great, we can do that. But what do you mean? And he said, the real significance of Easter. People will know what it is. So think about it when you have your bite of chocolate tomorrow or over the next few days. And it's all about fish as well, isn't it?
Fish. But it's also about sorry business, Jim.
Yes.
You know, we've been talking about it all throughout this program, but it's also a connection to sorry business in terms of the Christianity and, that sorry business stuff.
No, you're starting to get deep now, Nick.
I know, and I don't want to get too deep. I don't want to get too deep, but I just want to acknowledge that, you know, it is a very significant day for all many of our peoples around this country and around the world. And we don't want to make it any less and feel less of it, but it's very similar to what we've been talking about in terms of sorry business, just in a different terminology. Mm.
Their synergies there. So we talked about Telstra. Well, good luck to Telstra in reviving their reputation, because There's a lot of damage been done in around the territory. I'm on Telstra, so I'd appreciate the work they do. Sometimes I get a little bit confused about the technology around that. But hopefully they can lift their game and revive their reputation to be back on the Elevate list. So thanks for listening into Moorish Mag. We're going to go out with Theona Counsellor for another, this is another show that's finished before Easter. And have a great break over Easter, whatever it means to you. And tune in next Thursday for Moorish Mag on RTR FM.